Very good, thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. Andrew is on the other microphone. Do you want to say hello, Andrew?
Hello, Graham. How are you doing? All right.
I'm good, Andrew. Are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Okay. Just bear with me, Graham, 1 second. You're okay to talk?
I'm good.
Okay.
We're taking him away from...
Okay, let's go for this. Just before you listen to Graham's interview, it is a little bit windy outside. Just take it into consideration. It comes and goes. We're in studio. We have it all good. Hopefully you like it. Let's hit the intro jingle now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You're very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. For anything you hear, I'll show on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and sideshow.com. And on today's episode, we have a gentleman by the name of Graham Bodle. Did I pronounce that correctly, Graham?
Yeah, that was spot on, Matt.
Graham, also, I should add, for our listeners at home, this is a slight bit unusual, but we've had a little bit of a takeover. We are in studio in Dublin. My thanks go to Adrian and Andrew, who are on sound today, but none other than Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, a name you've heard crop up over the last whiles, is also in studio beside me. We'll get to him and his fantastic giggle in just a little bit. Graham, how do you know Andrew Fisher-Tomlin?
Really from the show circuit and also the London College of Garden Design. Those two places, really.
Did you go there, Graham?
No, I didn't go there. I went to some of their early opening days when they got lectures by certain professionals. But I didn't study there. I studied at Garden Design at Leeds. And then obviously known Andrew from Chelsea Flower Show, I think it is, yeah.
And in the nicest way of saying, Graham, for those who aren't aware, what would you be best known for? To the listeners at home, I should say, who are listening, let's say, in Salt Lake City or Dublin or London.
Okay, well, my background is that my grandparents started a nursery, and he started off growing roses, and then later on started growing pines and conifers. So I've tried to introduce those in a seductive way into my gardens, and the last few gardens have been kind of using reclaimed objects and finding beauty in demolition and things like that.
I'm going to just take you back on one point there, Graham. You know that roses and seduction, we're all very aware that if I was underneath the Eiffel Tower and found that place in any way romantic at all, insert joke here, he says slightly, but roses in gardens suggest something that are a little bit different. And to put that in context, it has been, I could probably count it on one hand, the amount of times I've planted roses maybe in the last 20 years. Is that a fair statement? How do you see that?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, we were growing, and it was originally called Walker's Roses, but they fell out of fashion. But I'd been using the pines and the conifers predominantly in the show gardens. But I think that the roses, people traditionally plant in a rose bed, it's certainly gone out the window, but people are kind of introducing them into mixed borders, I think, more. And these David Austin style, these blousy roses, people are willing to use those that kind of ramble and climb up everywhere.
Have you seen, and again, and I don't mean to stick on this one, Graham, but you've mentioned two things now, and it's like word association. You're making my job really easy here, a job if I might call it that, but conifers as well. When we speak to the likes of Matt in RHS Wisley, one of the first things that he was telling me that he did 2 years ago, a former guest of the show, I should add, was that he took the conifer and heather bed and essentially moved it to the bottom right, or to another part of the garden, shall I call it. Again, it's one of those, the last time I planted, let's say, dwarf conifers and headers was about 25 years ago. I was 16 years of age and I just started horticultural college. So if I'm not, or correct me if I'm wrong, you're kind of gone back beyond the Bowie era and you're gone into it's pre-Simon Garfunkel. You're almost a bit of T-Rex in there.
Yeah. And I think it's using them in the show gardens is a way of advertising and showing what people can do. But Fergus at Great Dixter, he started them, dotting them in the borders, and people are using them in pots in a more interesting way. because they'll do well in the pots, and you know they don't need a lot of care and attention. They're quite kind of a lower maintenance type of garden, which is attractive to a lot of people, especially younger people.
Well, let's stick on this point, and if we're going to go this direction, because again, I'll use the reference, if I can, of the analogy of Mark Boland, T-Rex. He walks out and he's in the platform shoes. All of a sudden, we come to the year 2018, 2019, and we're not wearing platforms, and I don't have a Donovan playing in the background, but you're sticking with that mantra. Is it a case of that you're doing so solely so you can say, well, this is what I've done, this is all I've done, this is all I'm being rhetoric in how I ask this, I apologise, but I'm going to keep pushing this whether you like it or not? Or is it a case of, no, Peter, look, log roll went out of fashion, I'm going to try and make it come back in?
I suppose I was really looking at the conifers and the pines in a way that they were going to create a atmosphere and also adding height to the garden. But I've started to look more at kind of the stems and the form of the plants, and managed to get hold of some older specimens that would instantly give a garden a sense of maturity. So it wasn't really topiary form. It was kind of a more windswept, wind-pruned kind of shape to them. A bit gnarly, interesting stems and trunks. And using the character of them rather than kind of conifers as a mound or a clump.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this, Peter, with looking at Graham's show gardens, is that, you know, I think seductive conifers is a good phrase, and it I like that. But I watch all the people standing around Mr. Ishihara's Japanese garden, and they're looking at these aces and these beautiful old pines and thinking, oh, that's amazing, this Japanese garden. You know, and then getting funny about pines. And you go down the road, you know, at Chelsea, 50 yards down, and there's Graham doing the same thing with a British vibe to it. And suddenly people are getting it, and you know that's what Graham's doing. It's not old fashioned or anything. He's looking at it in a modern way, and he's got that vibe to it which works really, really well.
Well, I don't know whether you're aware of the Gardens of Peace, Graham, that took place in northern France, that I should say myself and Andrew were involved. Not to speak about me, but the conversation that I had with Helen Basson was that when they did their garden at Thiepval, they essentially did a Basson, as I would call it. It's now a word in Oxford's English Dictionary, or some variation of. You're going to find it come up on Countdown as one of the conundrums. In a nutshell, the point I made to Helen was that if I tried to do a Basson, people would say, oh my God, Peter Donegan should be, you know, he's a bad boy, he's a bold boy. But because they did it, and it's what is expected, and albeit they did it extremely well, I should add, there is a difference between when another does that, when you do that. It's the equivalent of me trying to play free jazz instead of playing, let's say, I don't know, doing Led Zeppelin or Rolling Stones. Is it because you have a reputation, am I allowed to call it that, for doing things that are a little bit on the right-hand side of the road rather than down the middle? Does that allow you a little bit of carte blanche? Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, I think so. And I loved the James Basson when he did the garden, and it was depicting a burnt out forest, I think, in the south of France, and he got all the burnt branches and transported those from the actual site and took them to Chelsea. And this captivates the imagination and the atmosphere of a specific place. A lot of people might not get it and say, well, why would you use charred branches in a garden? But it was a great garden and an interesting garden that he did at Chelsea Flower Show. And I think it's just kind of thought-provoking. And at the same time, that's engaging with people, whether the horticultural knowledge is huge or whether they're just going for a look around and looking for something a bit different.
Graham, bring me back a little bit, if you can, to when maybe you were, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of age. What's your first memory of being involved in horticulture?
It was opening the van, because we used to go with my grandfather, and it was the smell of the van that was packed full of the plants that we were taking to the flower show. And it's a smell that I still get now when I go to the flower show. And that was my earliest kind of sense, or, you know, kind of memory, sensual memory of doing or going to flower shows.
Were you selling there, or were you designing there?
My grandfather used to do it. It was more in the plant nursery side of things, where he'd have he was collecting and exhibiting collections of the conifers. But we also used to do a bit of retail with the plants as well at Harrogate Spring Flower Show and Southport Flower Show. I think that he had a bad experience with the RHS when he went to the Chelsea Flower Show in the 1960s. So he stuck to a more local show level and stayed away from the RHS show circuit, so to speak.
Well, we'll skew on past that one just in case I get into a little bit of trouble, Graham, but thanks very much for dropping that in. However, whilst we're on the subject, this is a conversation that came up with Andrew over the last few days, and sometimes I have pictures in my head. Sometimes they're never real, Graham. Sometimes they are, and the difficulty can be maybe in making them a reality. You might turn around and say, well, look, the music analogy, pardon me for doing this on an irregular basis, but it might be a Dave Bowie, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. And when you come up with that concept, people say, oh my God, he's a little bit nuts, he's a little bit crazy. And then you do it and they go, oh my God, he's a genius. When you hit those local flower shows, however, and the conversation came up because of another former guest of the show, Anna Skibnevsky-Ball, who is the show manager at Cardiff. And we were saying, why wouldn't you go there? And the answer logically is, if you're on a career trajectory and you have your eye on that goal of heading to, let's be quite frank about it, a Chelsea, then you might therefore skew on past a Cardiff show. No disrespect to them. How come, or what are, I'm going to ask this almost by biblical definition, but what is the advantage of doing something like Harrogate? Because it's not always therefore then about the money or the greatest amount of sales.
No, I think it's an experience and getting your head around the logistics of building a show garden and arranging and organising yourself, because I'm doing the design and the build. So I think that it's education, educating yourself and what you need, and just organising yourself personally to be able to achieve to build a show garden. And when you're doing the design and build, there's quite a lot involved in you know, organising the plans, the construction, and getting a good team together, transport, accommodation. There's lots of different things to think about that are not necessarily garden design related, and more about personal organisation. And I think if you go to a local show, you're meeting people on that similar level that you know, can share those experiences with and can as well engage with the public and showcase your ideas.
I think you, in a little way, do yourself a bit of disservice, Graham, because I've known you for years now, and when we meet, you tell me about your latest ideas, and I know that all the ideas you've got coming up that you want to do show gardens and things. And I think so much of it is like you have these ideas standing down the bottom of your brother's field. And you see something, you think that would make a really good garden, and you don't just take it and put it in and plonk it in and make it easier for yourself. And I think it's this thing about how, you know, you go to some of these shows and people have got bloody big budgets and you know, they get lazy, and you don't have big budgets. You know, you're a family business, and if you go out to Walker's Nurseries, you can see all these gardens that he's done somewhere before, and great place. And I think you're sort of, you've isolated yourself enough that you come up with these ideas that you talk to me about them. I think this will be interesting. And then you come and build them yourself. And you're the only designer I know who plants every plant that they have in those gardens themselves and things. And you come down with them on the back of a truck and things. And I think, you know, there's something different there. That's not just, you know, I'm rocking up and I'm staying in a nice flat in Chelsea because I've, you know, got the budget and things. I think you there's a lot more thought goes into what you do.
I completely agree, but I think the thought process and the planning of it is elongated when you engage in a project so much, and then you kind of time it right to kind of building it up and kind of doing the fabrication work and building it as a jigsaw. So it's more than I think it becomes more than a garden. It's almost a connection with your kind of personality. And like you say, Andrew, you're kind of doing something that you believe in, rather than turning up with a load of fancy paving and fancy sculptures.
You're not trying to do something deliberately different. It's different anyway because it's your first idea and you're bringing it through. And I know you've got lots more coming.
Yeah,
Graham, do you find all of, and I, this is something I not to bring up his name for the sake of it, but like when I was talking with James Basson, a former guest of the show, I remember saying to James, you know, there was that point where Mam was looking at the back garden at me, and it was, you know, well, there's Peter, just leave him, he's happy, and it was. I felt a bit like, and I say quote unquote inverted commas, like I was a bit of a special child because I was goofing around with plants. I wasn't trying to be different. I had that Beatles haircut, or the bowler haircut, as we used to call it back in the 80s.
You did.
Well, I'm one of eight children, Graham, so it just ended up like, Mom's going to cut your hair whether you like it or not, sit still or else it'll be crooked. But in a nutshell, I was different without wanting to be different, if that makes sense. Do you get a sense of that now, that I also get still as now a grown-up?
I think so, because I've done some, at the garden centre, I've done some shop displays that were, in my mind, and not in a sense thought-provoking, but they were confusing for people to see me kind of working it out and kind of piecing it together as a display. And then when it was all together as a display, they kind of looked at it and think, well, yeah, I get that, but the actual journey there, people look at you miffed or think that you've dreamt it up on a wild night out, and you're just trying to put it together. But I think it's a thought process that's unique to the individual.
I think you should actually always follow Walker's Nurseries on Facebook and Twitter and things, because you see some interesting stuff. I mean, I just recently seen some white tree trunk things that he's been making in a warehouse, and he's got somebody who works for him. Plus, and they take you a long time, haven't they? And it's like, that's an interesting Christmas display. So, you know, but then that's what keeps your customers coming back, doesn't it?
Yeah, they look for it, and they get, I think in a commercial world where especially a lot of the garden centres have almost become shadows of each other, like Wyvell, and there's no difference in centre at the top of the country to the bottom of the country, then people get a bit bored of, seeing the kind of everyday displays with planograms, and they want something a bit more interesting, and people want an experience nowadays, don't they?
Yeah, this is the only guy I know who's actually got a ski lift that he uses in the garden centre. Serious.
I've got that out last week, actually. Yeah.
But Graham, you could have, if you don't mind me saying, there is the, how do I call it, like, let's say, for example, a Tuscany-style garden, which for those of you who are not at your desktop, if you looked at a rectangle shape of land, it's a Swiss flag across one pleached something tree in the middle, one bench, and four squares or smaller rectangles surrounded by books of sempervirens. It's a guaranteed by formula. It's almost guaranteed gold. You could have made life extremely easy for yourself and said, well, how about I just think of the box instead of outside of the box?
Yeah. I've tried to do that, but I tried to do it, and it wasn't my own thing. It just didn't work for me that with that approach, which was, I suppose, a realization that you've got to kind of believe in yourself, and it takes time. I'm 40 next year, and people starting off, they've got to. It doesn't happen overnight. You've got to kind of carve your own way out and just keep doing it and traveling and picking things up. I got some great ideas when we went to the Istanbul festival show, which Andrew invited me to, because we went for this reception in an old, I think it was an old orphanage, and it was unbelievable, just the textures and the kind of atmosphere created there, and that kind of stays in my mind for inspiration for doing things a little bit different.
Yeah, we had a long chat about that at the time, I remember, Graham, and we were, so if anyone's got a derelict building anywhere that they want to put something on, just let Peter know and we'll sort something out.
Graham, what's downtime for you, or what allows the mind to sit still for a little?
I think that if I'm going to do anything and working, you know, almost every day of the week, that for me to relax or be in some state of relaxation, then I've got to take myself away from the environment that and working in, and kind of go walking or explore the countryside, or as well go for a city break. Go somewhere away for a couple of days. That's the only way that I can really unwind. And at the same time, then you're taking notes, and you've got your phone and taking millions of pictures, and then sifting through them and putting them all in albums.
Oh my God. Our marriage would never work out, Graham, to be quite honest with you. It would never work out. Do you still do that? Do you develop the photographs and put them into albums?
No, I mean albums on the actual...
Okay. Right, I want to ask you a little bit of a quick fire round if we can. What was the last piece of music you bought, Graham?
I've not bought any music for years.
Okay, what's the one piece of music that drives you absolutely spare?
Madonna.
Wow, okay, that's deep. Where was the last place you went to for a while away?
Tel Aviv.
What? Right, okay, we'll run with that one. What was the last piece of art or photograph you bought?
I bought some Alpine paintings from a junk shop.
How much?
Tenner.
What? How many?
Seven. It's for a grotto that I was building.
Because you do that regularly, though.
Do you have a party piece if you're at a wedding, Graham?
No, but I'd like to be able to dance like Magic Mike.
I have no idea who Magic Mike is, but it sounds dangerous, Graham.
It involves tables.
That sounds dangerous. Have you had an accident at work? We're halfway through to an insurance advert here. Graham, what's on the horizon for you, or what's the next thing in your head that may be on the horizon?
I've got putting an application to do an artisan garden at Chelsea Flower Show 2019. So that's been on my mind on my radar for the last, I suppose, year or 18 months. I've been collecting bits and pieces for and planning and getting organised for that.
Is actually you collect bits and pieces together, and that's how you end up doing these amazing show gardens, but they don't cost you too much, and it's at complete odds with what everyone else will tell you about, you need all this money to do it.
I've been doing them, collecting bits of scrap and visiting old quarries. Luckily there's quite a few quarries, and engaging with people there, and they find it quite interesting, and they're happy for you to go and reclaim bits of scrap or stone. And what I like about doing it is when you're talking to people about it, they really buzz off it, because they think that you're just a bit nutty and they can't wait to see it all put together, and they think, oh well, I was involved in that, and they look out for you. And people are incredibly helpful and friendly when I've been trying to salvage bits and pieces and find bits for gardens and things like that. So you're also engaging with other people in the project, and they keep a lookout for things as well.
And you've always done those artisan gardens as well, and they've really come into their own over the last few years. It's the one place at Chelsea where you will see different stuff. So, I mean, we have to say, actually, that, you know, last couple he's done, he's won the best artisan garden as well. Because it is a
bit different,
there's a strong story behind it as well.
I mean, I think it's been good as well, Andrew, because they've allowed you to make them, they've took sense and made them a bit bigger, so they've given you a bit more scope. But the gardens that I've been doing, because they're smaller plots, I've not bamboozled myself by making a small garden. I've created a section of a larger landscape.
Sorry, are all those gardens, they all go back to Walker's Nurseries, and you can go and visit them after?
Yeah, we put the elements of it up, and there's one in its entirety, but the crane that I used in the drawbridge, we made the effort and the time to rebuild those at the garden centre, and people love looking at it, and the customers really love the kind of story behind it. They like watching it on the TV, and a lot of them, the customers at the garden centre, they come down to Chelsea to visit, which is I'm very thankful that they do that, and that they really engage with the projects that I do.
Graham, I just want to ask you briefly, we mentioned partway through this about the pros and cons of going with, let's say, for example, a Tuscany style garden, but when you're putting the brief together on this, the behind the scenes of the Chelsea gardens, the behind the scenes that most punters who are visiting would not get to see or read, and it is, again, to use the Basson example, it is what explains why it's also a garden but also based upon a quarry, let's say, for example, in your case, when you're putting pieces of, to use your word, scrap and leftover together, how does that all fare when you're putting it together as a visualization, number one, but number two, as part of a brief, an official brief, I should add?
Well, I suppose I struggled with the brief a bit, and Andrew's given me some assistance with that in the past, but simplifying it in your mind. But these structures that I'm building, it's so important for me to get them fabricated and to put those and to get them erected or put into the place, and then spray paint the garden around it to just make sure that this is going to have the impact and the scale and the excitement that it's given me by actually figuring it out and getting it actually constructed. Not the entire garden, but the main structural elements. It's really critical in the sense that that's right. So I try and do that at an early phase, at an early stage of the process. I'm not one for paperwork, so I don't have a lot of designs and construction drawings, and I'm sure that when I put these applications in before, they've had a bit of a laugh about looking through my application, because it looks like something that would be drawn on the back of a fag packet.
But there's gardens, Graham, that I've pieced together, and I've literally got phone calls partway through those meetings where they've said, listen, we think this is what we're looking at, but we're not sure if this is what we're looking at. Is this what we're looking at? And I'm almost trying to explain how I didn't do the thing that got me into trouble, but I don't know why I'm in trouble, but they just... It's like as if I've gone backwards into my own childhood in some kind of oddball space age movie, and I never intended for it to be there, but it is the case where I'm having to explain to the grown-ups that no, this is exactly what you're seeing. Do you get that? But if you understand me, do you then feel again like that special child all over again without even intending to do so?
I think a lot of people look at it and think, well, and they come up with maybe the phrase, well, why bother? And especially with things like health and safety and method statements and risk assessments. And I have to employ someone to do that because I don't want it to hold me up. But I always think, well, why not, you know? Why not do it?
Okay. For those of you listening at home, Graham, do you do the social media things by a chance, do you?
I'm on the Instagram.
Okay.
I use that, and I'm not so active on Facebook, but generally I post a lot of the projects and things through the Walker's Nurseries Twitter and social media and Facebook.
Okay. Well, look, for those of you listening at home, if you want to get in touch with Graham Bodle, one, you can send Andrew Fisher-Tomlin a text if you have his number. We'll give that to you at the end of the show. I'm only joking. phone calls.
That'd be interesting.
You could phone him at 3 o'clock in the morning and sing Marvin Gaye to him all the way. Yeah, but on a serious note, let's try stick on song. Graham, hopefully we'll see you at Chelsea Flower Show 2019. I'll very much look forward to it. Graham will be in the artisan area. And if people want to visit the nursery, Graham, how do they best get to there?
Yeah, it's just literally at the end of, there's a newish airport that's Doncaster Sheffield Airport, and it's just literally at the top of the runway there. It's quite easy to find. You get flights from Ireland. It literally takes you 5 minutes to get there.
Okay, fair enough. Well,
and we're serving breakfast, dinner, and afternoon tea.
He said breakfast, dinner, and afternoon tea, not Brexit dinner and afternoon tea. But we park that joke entirely to one side as well. Graham Bodle, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. For anything else you hear listening at home, at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodshow, sodshow.com. I should add a huge thanks to our sound crew behind the team, and also to London College of Garden Design, and Andrew to my left, who is in on this episode. Have a great weekend, the great outdoors. I say a great weekend if you're listening to this on a Wednesday. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Sweet.
Thanks, Graham.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.